Chapter 7. A Midsummer Night's Dream. In the course of the solar year, a time comes when all of nature radiates in full beauty, and summer begins. Trees are in bloom, flowers spread their splendor, and whatever can bear fruit promises a rich crop. It is therefore completely understandable that everything and everybody connected with nature is full of gratitude for everything that nature reveals. From the dawn of history up to this hour, mankind has welcomed the beginning of summer with merriment. It has been celebrated with songs and welcomed with all sorts of festivities. It goes without saying that any nature religion has always adapted itself completely to this. How could it be otherwise? In the animistic as well as in the polytheistic religions, this natural way of acting is clearly apparent. Likewise, official natural Christianity is no exception in this respect. The festivals, prayer meetings, and thanksgiving services for everything nature has provided during the summer have, in official Christianity, been accepted for ages. Here also, nature and religion are strongly connected. Why should one object to such gratitude? Without the products of nature, life surely could not be maintained. Without abundant crops, life is inconceivable under dialectic circumstances. Who would object to sunshine and a mild temperature, to the song of birds and flowery splendor? Therefore, the conscious celebration of summer and of its arrival are most natural and necessary. Whoever has a chance goes into the country and uses his holidays to absorb as much as he can from everything summer has to offer. Still, there is a summer festival and a welcome of the beginning of a summer of a quite different kind. This festival is as old as our nature order and was celebrated unceasingly with the same warmth and the same conviction and the same affection as the festival of our visible nature. We mean the festival of the White Rose, the festival of St. John, John the Baptist, one of the great figures who plays such an important role in the spiritual process of the growth of mankind. The superficial spectator has never been able to understand why this festival, the festival of St. John, coincides with June 21st, the prelude of summer in nature. What happened with the figure of John is no different from what occurred to so many great spiritual leaders. All kinds of ceremonial garments were put around him. He was given the distinction of a holy man, but in the meantime, his figure was mutilated beyond recognition. All his spiritual greatness, all his spiritual courage and power have been consciously or unconsciously buried under holy images, under midsummer festivals, famous processions at home and abroad. But if one would understand who the figure of John really is and what it means in a human life, one would certainly not shout his holiness from the rooftops unless as a conscious deception in order to keep mankind blind to its true meaning. Can you imagine a more powerful representative of ardent courage, of fierce resistance to the letter of the doctrines, to hypocrisy, than John the Baptist? If besides Jesus Christ, there has been anybody who fulminated against the rigid scribes, against the Pharisees, then it was certainly this John. There are also groups of esoteric mentality who have entirely forgotten their spiritual calling in this connection. They too celebrate their St. John festival as a harvest thanksgiving. We are, of course, thankful to the large host of serving nature spirits for their incessant work in the vegetable kingdom. But is that the full meaning of the festival of John the Baptist? Certainly not. We can also see it mystically and join in the celebration of the good elves because of the victory gained over the deteriorating powers in their domain. But has this anything to do with the true festival of John the Baptist? No, a sharper contrast is not conceivable. The fullness of nature, the festival of satiety against the figure of John the Baptist, wandering through the desert and confronting the public with his sermons of penitence and judgment. It is certainly not by accident that John, as the voice of one crying in the wilderness of life, did his work in Bethany, as Bethany symbolizes the house of transit. We too, this very day, are still living in this house of transit, this house full of misery. When the night of perdition is at its darkest, when the misery in the world is the greatest, again and again figures like John appear, messengers of the brotherhood of the immovable kingdom, who let their message sound throughout the world, make straight the way of the Lord. They announce themselves without any outward demonstration or any complacency, wrapped only in a garment visible to their equals, just as John once wore a camel's hair robe. In no way do they even boast that they are sounding a new tune, for, as they say, already Isaiah exclaimed, "Make straight the paths of the Lord." They will come in simplicity as servants of mankind, without hope for fame or honor, only as the mouthpieces of the spiritual. School, teaching how this earthly house of transit for man and world must be passed through and rebuilt in the right way, to find him who will come after John, who must come after him. For without the one who must be awakened in each human life, you will not be able to leave Bethany, this house full of misery, neither with an infinite number of processions, nor with midsummer night festivals lasting for centuries, nor with innumerable holy images erected in the honor of John. Now we may ask ourselves the following question. Would not a figure such as John the Baptist have more effect if his testimony would sound in the hardness of winter or in the dying hours of autumn? How will a man who needs the gifts of summer so badly ever hanker for the festival of St. John with his desert and his asceticism? And why should one speak here of the white rose? Try to imagine a twofold midsummer night's dream. First, there is a dream, always followed by a bitter awakening. For indeed, the summer festival in the ordinary nature is really nothing but a reaction to the struggle for life. Man needs bread. He labors for it, and nature provides it. He shows the thankfulness and the jolliness of the ordinary natural being. But when he awakens from this dream, hunger is back, and a new struggle rises and falls again and again. Thus the organism of man is subjected to wastage. It becomes old and tired. Finally, no piece of bread and no fun are of any help to him any longer. The mechanism is worn out. Could it be possible, one may ask, that man is making a mistake, chasing a chimera with all his exploration of nature? Does not man, with his spontaneous and understandable love for nature, love and belong to a being with an ass's head, as in Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream? If this is actually the case, one must come to the conclusion that another fullness of summer can be celebrated, a fullness that gives an absolute satiety, a feast that, moreover, gives eternal youth. Just as one of the characters of Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream knows to be tied to the being with the ass's head, likewise is man who throws himself entirely to nature and its impulses. However, when nature does not give complete satisfaction and at the same time one also wants that which is not of this world order, the result will necessarily be an attempt to serve two masters. The situation has now arrived that the other essential reality, the new life, is eager to greet us, provided we are willing to make a start with our farewell to earthly nature. Man must first leave the being with the ass's head to be able to receive the new life, as in Shakespeare's play, Hermia must liberate herself from Lysander so that she may belong to Demetrius. Demetrius, however, receives only Helena. That is the part in man that seeks for the metaphysical contact, whereas the real being, in the forest of delusions, remains with both legs planted in reality. The performance between the four aspects of man in Shakespeare's play is grandiose and entirely true. The consciousness clings to the black lump of earth, and the mystic aspect searches for the higher self. But it will always remain nothing but searching as long as one continues to cling to this nature, for the door will never be opened upon such knocking. Therefore, both summer festivals are both diametrically opposed to each other. They are entirely different. For the pupil on the path, no other choice remains but the choice between one of the two, either the way of nature or the path to the spirit. In past times, when the pupils of the mysteries had to be watchful in many ways for persecutions, they used all kinds of camouflage to cover their real intentions. Thus, for example, a veiled language came into use, and thus the Festival of the White Rose was adapted according to its outer appearance to church ceremonies, commemorations, and to summer festivals. Hence, outwardly, the Festival of the White Rose adapts itself surprisingly well to the situation of the visible nature on June 21st, but in reality, this outward celebration has nothing to do with its essential purpose. The pupil who wants to celebrate the Festival of the White Rose must struggle through different processes which might be compared with seasons. The great process of renewal begins in winter. It is in the deepest nadir of his life that the pupil must begin his work of salvation. In this hour, the pupil must give his farewell to the being with the ass's head and turn very decidedly to the new life. If his farewell, this dying according to nature, has progressed in the right way, the seed of the new life is planted at the deepest nadir of his existence. The pupil may then begin to smooth his path in this nature, which meanwhile has become entirely strange to him, because for him it has changed into a desert. He knows that the seed, which the new life ethers have brought via the spiritual school, has germinated within himself, and the pupil now tries to let the young plant develop in the right way. He is going to straighten the paths of the Lord, because, owing to the newly received insight, he has promised to be obedient to the divine call. The pupil going the path applies it very concretely to himself. He knows that the reversal from a natural man to a spiritual man is a fight to the death, but he does not mind because he knows that pain is the purification in the melting pot. He knows that only the continuous touch of the hard grindstone produces the glittering that gives the diamond its value. Thus, after the winter festival, he celebrates his spring festival. The moment when the first signs of growth become visible. The new being in the pupil begins to appear more and more. Powerfully and clearly until the day of the summer festival approaches, the Midsummer Night's Dream, the night in which the Beloved One will reveal himself. The pupil is physically confronted with the Jesus being within him, who was born in the winter hour, who developed in springtime, and now, in the fullness of summer, takes the great initiative, the absolute command of the life of the pupil. This is the Festival of the White Rose, the beginning of the full life in Jesus the Lord. At that moment, the dialectic center of consciousness retires entirely, whereupon the Jesus being can start his beneficial work for the whole reconstruction of the microcosm. In this great work of the cross, the white rose will be colored red, like blood, until the consummatum est. Thus we discover that when the pupil wakes up from his Midsummer Night's Dream in the fullness of the life of Jesus, he shall never be hungry and thirsty for all eternity. The Festival of the White Rose, the reception of the Rose of John, signifies the union of the prepared pupil with the Jesus being. Such a fullness of summer becomes part of those who separate nature from spirit and are therefore going to gain a new nature. This is the secret of all true magic. This, then, is the secret of the doctrine of transmutation. Nobody can go along the way of sanctification if he continues to love the being with the ass's head, even if he lives a so-called mystic life. Nobody can attain the new nature without taking leave of the old nature. Both kinds of nature have their Midsummer Night's Dream, The waking up from one dream means subjection to the wheel of rise and fall, ascent and descent. The waking up from the other brings eternal fullness. All those who are going the way of true redemption will discover that this way must be fought for. All those who have walked this path know by experience that many powers are always trying to connect the pupil with the old nature again. It is certain that the gain of an entity for the new nature signifies a crisis for the old. Therefore, if you want to help to prevent that the earth and all its inhabitants perish in fire and terror, make straight the paths of the Lord with us. Jesus Christ leads mankind to its final destination. He who has not adapted himself in time to his sanctifying ether vibrations, who has not learned to endure his power, will remain in the desolate darkness of a life without God. Hence, there is gladness in heaven each time a human soul is converted. There is joy when a man enters the holy halls of the temple of the Spirit in order to celebrate and seal consciously the union with the imperishable life. In Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream, it is Oberon, the king of the domain of the nature spirits, who, by means of his servants, does everything possible to connect Hermia with Lysander. Thus, it appears that the pupil has not only to conquer himself, but also all those others who try to prevent him from undertaking the redeeming action. Each pupil standing on the path of renewal can testify how true this is and what great struggles must be fought. But for him, the joy lies in the fact that he can now prove that the seed germinated through the divine substance of life has made him seize the new idea of life, and that he can precede mankind in the newly risen sunlight, never to descend again. For once the soul is born, neither heights nor depths nor any spiritual malices can detain the pupil from the love of God, which is everything in all. May God grant that you be found a victor on your way of redemption. May you all become strong in spirit, so that you may also once testify openly, consciously called, of the New Jerusalem, in which the eternal summer festival is celebrated everlastingly.